On this episode of ACC Nation, the NFL Draft. The players selected in the first round. We'll get the fans' perspective on picks made by the New York Giants and Minnesota Vikings. Next Saturday is a redo of the 2018 ACC Men's Lacrosse Championship as Notre Dame and Virginia go head-to-head. The Cavaliers are looking for some payback. They lost last year, 17-7. We'll have the results of the ACC Women's Lacrosse Championship between North Carolina and Boston College. That's going to be at accnation.net. And coming up, Bill from mybeerbuzz.com joins me to talk about, well, what else? Beer. We'll delve into the new Belgium NC State sports collaboration brew that has Pack fans, dare I say, buzzing. Okay, enough for the bad puns. The first round of the NFL draft was kind to the ACC. It was seven players picked. Boston College, Clemson, Duke, Florida State, and NC State all repped. Let's get into it, guys. We'll warm up with ACC Defensive Player of the Year, Cleland Farrell, out of Clemson, headed to Gruden's Playhouse, or Madhouse, depending on how you want to look at it, in Oakland. Some of the pundits were surprised that he went as early as number four. So, Will, you have thoughts on Farrell and Oakland?
See, this guy had to do my Gruden impression. I thought Wilkins is a better player than Farrell personally. I thought Farrell was a little high for four, but you know, this is, you know, the first draft for Mike Mayock as being, you know, the Oakland guy after spending all those years at NFL Network, and maybe he's kind of have that contrarian. It seems like some of those picks he had throughout the draft were kind of contrarian to what some of the other pundits were saying. But mm-hmm. You know what? I can't fault a guy for wanting to take a player off the best defensive line in the country last year.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there.
He would not have been my pick.
Well, let me ask you something. Since you brought up Mayock, and you know, over the years watching him on the NFL draft and doing his analysis and stuff, you point out that being kind of a contrarian maybe in his picks. You know, when you sit back, you kind of get a feel for things from a different perspective. But then when you get thrown into the mix, especially as late in the game as Mayock did, do you think maybe he got overwhelmed with stuff and maybe was a little too quick to pull the trigger on things? Or do you feel like overall, just from a general perspective, because we didn't analyze Oakland, at least I didn't, do you think he did a pretty good job in his first time out?
I think actually his other picks were fine, and especially in the first round. As far as, you know, what being rushed, I don't think so. I'm sure he was working on this draft basically the day after last year's draft. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a little different when you're covering the league as a whole to being specific to one team. And like I said, I thought the rest of the draft was fine, but I felt this was a little high.
Okay.
For Farrell.
Yeah, I think that most of the pundits felt that way. Let's see what Xavion thinks. Farrell going at number four. Out to Oakland and joining Gruden and the gang.
So I definitely was happy with the pick because it really set up the Giants to do a very good thing. But clearly, as you saw, they didn't. We'll get to that in a second. To me,
popcorn.
It was absolute reach.
Popcorn moment, folks. I'm just telling you, get your popcorn ready. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For that six, all that. It was a reach, in my opinion. Yes, he was a part of the best defensive line in college, but dude, being a part of a team like those, it was best defensive line in college because they had all those parts together. You take them individually, I don't think they're going to have the same success individually. Very good quality players, but number four, at the contract, the money you're going to have to pay at that rate, absolute reach, in my opinion. You had Josh Allen, defense end rusher that could absolutely probably give you a legitimate replacement for Khalil Mack. Quinton Williams was just taken, so that didn't work out. But there was other players that they could have picked before Farrell. And honestly, they probably could have. He probably might have dropped to later on in the first round had they not picked him so early. And they could have gotten him at a better value, in my opinion. It's Oakland. The Oakland Raiders are going to be the Oakland Raiders. It kind of came across. They did decently this draft. But they had a lot more head scratching picks than picks that made sense, in my opinion.
All right, so let's go back to this question that I threw out at Will. Mayock, do you think he's in over his head, or did he do okay?
Besides, overall, he did I'd give him a good solid C plus, maybe a B minus, depending on what these players actually produce in a year's time. What we can really give a better. But I still say you have the fourth overall pick. You have to get one of those can't miss guys. Don't get a guy that is questioned or looked at as a mid round. You have to get those guys that are necessarily are viewed as guarantees, because we still know that they can be viewed as a guarantee and come to the NFL and not do squat. So just reaching for players this day and age with what we know of the years past, like, you shouldn't be reaching for players. And I want to keep making that the emphasis. Do not reach for players who are not viewed as the guys, regardless of the position, Daniel Jones.
We're going to find out a little more about that in just a moment. Quick question for both of you, and I'll start with Will, and then I'll go back to Xavion. Your thoughts on John Gruden as a coach?
I really wonder if this is going to work out, because it's been so long since, you know, he was a coach. You know, he was at the Monday Night Football booth for so many years, and then taking on one of the biggest dumpster fires of organizations in the NFL. I mean, I know there's one up y'all's way that might be a bigger dumpster fire, but they did do some things right in this draft, like taking the running back Jacobs from Alabama. That was like probably the most given pick in this draft. That was probably the easiest call to make, but you know, I still don't know if their team's going to be that much better this year.
Yeah, I mean, same. It's every time John Gruden's had success, he acquired teams that were already stacked and loaded. So he didn't really have to build up these teams and whatnot. He was given great teams. So I think anybody that has half a sense of football mind can execute wins when you have a team filled with this talent and whatnot. So I think the jury's still out on Gruden and his ability to develop and create these teams and get them to the promised land.
Interesting takes. Well, here we go. Is our pick six a gamble? Daniel Jones of Duke is the second quarterback picked in the NFL draft. He heads to the NFL's Giants. Some speculation was that Washington was sniffing around. We'll find out maybe there was another team involved, as they picked their own later in the draft in Haskins. We'll get into more of the NFL draft with the guys in a moment. If you haven't heard of sports collaboration beers, then heads up. Late last week, I caught up with the producer and co-host of Friday Beer Buzz, a multiple AP and Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters award-winning program, and the man behind a great beer blog called MyBeerBuzz.com. You want to check that out, where their mantra is bringing good beers and good people together. Here's my conversation with Bill. So I interrupted your vacation, and you kindly accepted our invite to talk beer, which obviously is a passion. Let's talk about this new Belgium NC State collaboration. We'll do that in a moment. First, let's find out a bit about the path that you took to get into blogging and broadcasting about beer.
Yeah, so, you know, I've always had an interest in better beer, I would call it. You know, there's nothing wrong if you like Anheuser-Busch, you like Bud, they're just fine. But I've always had an interest in better beer. And it literally was an April Fool's Day dare by my wife to start a website. And so she thought I had a lot to say about beer. And so so I launched MyBeerBuzz.com a little over 10 years ago, about 10 years and a few months ago. And one thing led to another, and that sort of branched into an offer to do a weekly live craft beer radio show. We do that on WILK. It's a local Northeast Pennsylvania news station. We're live every Friday at 8:30 in the morning, which is a bit of a challenging time to be tasting beer. That, you know, it was just sort of a natural progression to do that. So it allows me to to vent some of my creative energy on building a website and some of my sort of social energy on doing a radio show. And it's, of course, a topic I love.
That's how we kind of stumbled upon you and started looking at what you had posted about Old Tuffy. I got a couple quick questions for you. Are you a home brewer?
Sure. I'm very active with our local home brewing association. We have them on the show quite a few times. To know me, you would know I don't do anything like very little. So if I do anything, I dive in with both feet. And to dive in with both feet for home brewing, for me, just the cost and the space and the just the time commitment. So no, I would say I'm not an active home brewer, but I certainly participate with home brewers quite a bit.
Have you ever had any interest for working for a brewery?
Yeah, you know, I'm around them, and I deal with the, and this sounds, it sounds callous, but I deal with the people a lot that own breweries. And I can tell you that it's a mix of personality types. Some of them very pleasant, sort of what I would call happy drunk kind of people. And some of them maybe not so much. So I get to see the good side of things where it's happy. We all get together. It's very collaborative. We make a beer. We enjoy the beer. But I unfortunately get to see the side of it where, you know, financial planning isn't so great and the breweries struggle. And so I guess I would call brewing or being part of the brewing industry sort of maybe a passion career for me down the road. But it doesn't seem to be one for me to pay the bills, so to speak.
Okay.
So I do kind of a day job thing. And then the website and the radio show, I'm really... I just do for fun.
Well, let's talk about Old Tuffy. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so Old Tuffy it comes out of New Belgium Brewing Company. New Belgium has two locations, in Colorado, one in Colorado and one in North Carolina. And it's something I sort of stumbled upon. I can tell you that New Belgium Brewing beers are very popular on my site. They're about the third or fourth largest craft beer, depending upon who you ask. And Old Tuffy was a recent one. I certainly noted the collaboration here with NC State. Collaboration beers are also very, very big on my site. So this was a natural for me to post. It's what New Belgium is calling a premium lager. And I think premium lager tends to refer to a better ingredient, better class of lager than what we would typically see in sort of an American light lager, which would be, you know, your Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light kind of beers. There are not a lot of details available on it right now. This is a recent one. I think you stumbled upon it a day or so after I actually stumbled upon it. What was interesting to me is they're launching it in a new size can that a lot of breweries are pushing out there. It's a larger can. It is 19.2 ounces, so it's a fairly big package for a beer. They're going to release it in 12-ounce cans as well as kegs. It seems to be geared toward NC State in that it seems like it will not see distribution beyond some of the sporting venues, but New Belgium isn't really releasing any details on that just yet.
Sports collaborations, as you kind of pointed out here, are trendy. They have been trendy for quite a while, and New Belgium is certainly can't go wrong working with a team there in North Carolina, since, as you pointed out, they have their location in Asheville, an additional one. Let's talk a little bit about, from the standpoint of these beers and how they are received by the fans. Is it the beer? Because craft beers, typically, there's a quality, a taste difference. Or is it the novelty that helps to push this beer, in this particular instance, the Old Tuffy?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think if you get any brewery, whether that's a big brewery or a small craft independent brewery, to put out a sports-related beer, I think it sells. You know, it's sort of a rabid audience. It's sort of a captive audience. I know I'm from Pennsylvania, and so I know if you put out a Penn State beer, if they ever did sort of an officially licensed Penn State beer, I know the fans would eat it up. In this case, I think the fact that it is craft adds to that and enhances that relationship. The fact that this one was developed for a local market, And the old other one I mentioned to you was Old Aggie for Colorado State, which is their other brewery market. It makes sense, and the fans seem to love them. Ask all the time about some of the pro sports collaboration beers. You know, Budweiser does themed cans for each football team every so often. And it's one of the more popular questions on my site is, you know, where can I find the Philadelphia Eagles can, or where can I find the Kansas City Chiefs can? So I know they're popular. The breweries are putting them out there. New Belgium has a little bit more money in the game to be able to experiment with these things than many of the smaller breweries. And they've not done, you know, at least from a true sports themed things, they've only done a few. I think I mentioned to you they did one for the World Cup. They've done one for Colorado State. Now they've done one for NC State. They seem to work with some of the ski resorts in Colorado as well, but they seem to be very popular. I just think the small craft breweries don't necessarily have the money to jump in and risk such a venture.
Yeah, it's quite an investment money-wise. Well, is this something that you see that's growing? And is it profitable for people like New Belgium and for Anheuser-Busch is into it as well? And in maybe throw in a couple other names there of people who are involved in this quote-unquote sports collaboration beers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing more and more of them. I can tell you just in very broad terms, like I mentioned before, collaboration beers themselves are very popular. And whether that's two breweries working together, or a brewery working with a nonprofit, or a brewery working with a sports team, collaboration beers seem to sell. So I think right off the bat, they know that they have a market there. It's my impression this one will be sold at the stadium during football season. Again, sort of a captive audience. And I think people that aren't into craft beer may use this as what we call a gateway beer. You know, maybe I'm just a Bud Light drinker, but hey, here's this Old Tuffy from my alma mater, and it's a lager, and it sounds good, and it's a 19.2-ounce can. I'm going to buy it. And I think we're seeing more and more of that. There are not a ton of sports collaborations in the craft beer market because, again, most of these guys are small. They're not New Belgian-sized breweries. I can tell you Oscar Blues is a big brewing company. They have a facility in Brevard, North Carolina, as well as Longmont, Colorado, and in Austin, Texas as well. They sponsor NASCAR. Now, they don't sponsor the big series. They sponsor sort of the I think it's called the Monster Energy or the Busch. It used to be the Busch series. And they've done well with that, and it seems to fit into their market. But again, they are among craft breweries, they're one of the big ones. You know, the top two or three breweries are Yingling, which is a local brewery in Pennsylvania that qualifies as craft, Sam Adams, Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, and Oscar Blues. So the big guys can take it on. I don't think some of the small guys really have the money to play in that arena.
Bill, I really appreciate you taking the time. I asked for only 5 minutes, but I really appreciate you joining us and talking to us a little bit about sports collaboration beers, especially Old Tuffy at NC State. And I really encourage people to check out mybeerbuzz.com. And I really like this. Bring good beers and good people together, because that's really what it's all about. Definitely.
And that has been our mission statement. And I should mention, Jim, that the day you contacted me about Old Tuffy, I was actually at New Belgium Brewing Company in Asheville, North Carolina. So it was kind of an interesting kismet how this all came out together.
Timing is everything, my man. I tell you, it works out that way. I'd love to have you come back and talk with us some more about beer and how it all kind of ties in with sports and stuff.
Sounds good. I appreciate your time, and I've had a good time doing it.
That pick six, round one, pick six, New York Giants. They scoop up Daniel Jones out of Duke. And so we're going to get a fan's reaction in Xavion. You're first, buddy, and we got the popcorn out.
I'm absolutely disappointed in the Giants front office. I'm disappointed in the Manning family. I'm disappointed in, Cutcliffe? I'm disappointed in all the higher-ups that sat there and want to feed us this nonsense that Daniel Jones is worthy of a first-round pick. Not only a first-round pick, but a top-10 pick. We saw Duke games last year. We saw Duke games the year prior. We've seen his whole entire career for Duke games. At no point did he ever jump off on the screen of being worthy of a if you draft somebody, a quarterback at the sixth pick, that's not somebody you're planning on sitting for 3 years with that nonsense Dave Gettleman wants to put out. You don't pick somebody at six to sit for 3 years, especially quarterback, especially with today's day and age. That's a lie. Daniel Jones, from my understanding, they always speak about you don't have to have the arm strength for the NFL, but if you can be accurate, you can succeed. Where was the accuracy in the 3 or 4 years he was at Duke? Because I didn't see it. And you can say, oh, well, he didn't have the players, talented players around him. That doesn't help his case. If you're accurate, you'll be able to handle even the worst players around you, still being able to catch catchable balls in certain instances. He comes from an athletic family. Kudos. I'm pretty sure anybody in NFL being drafted comes from an athletic family. So that doesn't mean anything. I was absolutely speechless. I was going in thinking, you know, like I said earlier, Oakland was supposed to throw in a surprise pick, and thankfully Oakland did what Oakland was supposed to do and essentially made the rest of the top 10's job easier. But the Giants are going to be the Giants, and of course we're going to do the stupid things. You could have, if you really, really wanted Daniel Jones, you probably could have waited until 17. And even if the Redskins took him, then Dwayne Haskins is falling in your lap. Now, Dwayne Haskins isn't that much better. He's not going to be that much greater. But I would so much rather get value at six than getting a quarterback that it just doesn't, it doesn't, the film, watching him over the years, there's nothing that stands out. There's nothing. Not a single thing about Daniel Jones. If you look at his face, he has the most boring face I've ever seen in my life as well. And I just don't understand why.
And that's so important in the NFL, right?
Yeah, well, it is, because you got to look at the market. He's going to New York City.
Yeah.
He's not going to Cincinnati. He's not going to the middle of America. He's going to a market where you have to you have to have a certain level of looks, but you also have a certain level of charisma and swagger.
Okay. I see where you're going. Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't – none. You don't get any of those things from Daniel Jones. Not at all. And this is a person, again – you're picking this man to lead a franchise, replace Eli Manning, who won two Super Bowls. That's who you're asking to come and replace. And you're going to tell me Daniel Jones is that person.
So you're not going to buy into the story or whatever it may be, the distraction of Washington. And who was the other team that we had briefly discussed?
I think it was Denver, possibly. I think it was.
Okay. So you're not buying into that they were sniffing around Jones and it was more smoke and mirrors. Is that what you're saying?
The reason why I don't believe it, because the Arizona going into this week was saying that they were unsure who they were going to pick.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was kind of a gimme, wasn't it?
Yeah, like I don't.
It was sort of like
last.
Yeah,
last
sure.
New England was talking about getting a Lamar Jackson. Like there's all these smoke screens. I do not believe anything until they get up there and the commissioner starts reading the call with the number one overall pick, so-and-so picks. All right, then that's who they're getting. All those smoke screens and stuff, that's the team's ways of hopefully getting somebody to jump up and make a trade and whatnot. If I would have felt so much better if we had traded out of the pick than pick Daniel Jones. If you trade out of the pick and get more value, I will live with that. But picking him at six, when you have so many needs, who's going to rush the passer next year? You got rid of Olivier Vernon. Who's rushing the passer? There's nobody on the roster. I think they had a combined 30, maybe 40 sacks, and Olivier Vernon was a good fourth of those sacks, and he's gone. And you got picks for him, and you didn't necessarily fill any other pass rushing needs through the draft. We can get on the other subject, all the other players that they traded up and all the DBs. We're going to have a DB-filled team, so hopefully nobody will be able to pass on us, but you'll be able to run and do everything else. Not happy at all. And I would love, I bring on the challenge of Daniel Jones proving me wrong. Make me look like a fool. Make me eat my words. Make me look foolish. All those things. I beg of you, please do that, because this is, it's looking like mediocrity going forward. The only benefit of this is that Eli probably has one more year, then Daniel Jones will get thrown in, and which means we'll essentially more than likely suck for another 2 years. And when Trevor Lawrence, after he wins his third national championship at Clemson, breaks all the college records, will be sitting, and Giants will be the number one overall pick, and they will draft Trevor Lawrence. Hold on a second. I have to actually be realistic. More likely, we won't draft Trevor Lawrence at number one when he comes out. We'll probably draft a punter, because that's the Giant thing to do. So, yeah.
Okay. I actually went through two bags of popcorn on that one. So basically, if I get this right, and quite frankly, I've been reading around a lot of New York Giants fans. Basically, it seems like about 75-25 was like WTH when the pick was made. So, you know, those folks are gonna have to have some proof in the pudding too. So Daniel Jones has a lot on his shoulders to deliver. Now we'll see if he can do it.
Did anybody in your lifetime, did you think you'd be hearing a Duke quarterback would be taking in the first round of the NFL draft?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
But you know, it's all about who you know. You know, Cutcliffe, Mannings,
clearly,
yada yada yada. Personally, if I couldn't have gotten Kyler, I probably would have gone with Haskins, you know, knowing that I need a quarterback. Now, I think that what that means is that if you'd gone with Haskins, you'd probably have to change your coaching staff around too, to adjust more to his style of playing. But it certainly would have put the Giants back on the map, in my opinion. So,
but the other thing is too, though, is if you look at how the draft played out, Drew Lock fell. Will Greer fell. There's so many other quarterbacks that could. Daniel Jones is going to be a glorified backup. I'm sorry, like you just paid a glorified backup, a Ryan Fitzpatrick-esque player, lot of money.
Yep. Yeah,
a long time too.
Certainly, I think a lot of people, and of course maybe Duke fans will not agree with this, but I would say Ryan Finley's a better quarterback and Will Greer's a better quarterback than Daniel Jones, and I probably would have gone with the consistency in a known quantity. I probably would have gone with Finley first rather than Greer, because Greer is he's never really impressed me to the extent that I would say that that's somebody I want leading my team, but he's a good quarterback. But anyway, let's go to the guy who had to mute his mic for the last 7 or 8 minutes because he was laughing so hard. Will, all right, your time. Daniel Jones, Duke, to the New York Giants.
I'm not sure there's any more meat on the bone.
I think that's been gnawed down pretty close to the marrow.
Yeah, probably gnawed through the bone too. But like, I understand Xavion's frustration. Trust me, I thought it was just a weird pick. I'm looking at some of the things Daniel Jones has done throughout his Duke career, and yeah, he's done some great things throughout his career. But especially when you look at last year, when they got in the conference play, he just wasn't. He was just okay at best. And his best game was Pitt, when he threw 4 touchdowns and 396 yards, but there were 99 total points scored in that game. So, of course, you know, quarterbacks are going to look good then. Look at his issue. You know, he struggled against Virginia throughout his career. I think it was like to the tune of like 3 touchdowns and 9 interceptions in the 3 years against Virginia. Saw his last game of the regular season this year against Wake Forest when he was 17-36 for 145 yards. He struggled against Miami this year, completed not even 49% of his passes, averaged 3.7 yards per attempt.
Jesus.
And yeah, I've made, you know, Duke's offensive line hasn't been that great the last couple of years. It's fair to acknowledge that. But you got to do it's not like he's had bad skill position players. He's had some, you know, good receivers, you know, over the span of his career, you know, maybe not like pro players, but, you know, good solid college players who would at least earn a, at least a tryout on a pro team. But yeah, I at number six is too high, way too high. I thought he might have been maybe the fourth best quarterback in this draft. We were talking before the podcast, Xavion and I, about how Gettleman basically got played by the Redskins, knowing that they wanted Haskins, but just sending all that smoke out there saying that they wanted Jones. And it, I mean, Washington had that fall perfectly right into their lap, and I can't believe how it played out. And I understand. Yeah, I'm with a lot of Giants fans questioning that pick.
It's probably the only smart thing that Daniel Snyder has done in many a year for Washington.
Ever?
History.
Well, yeah. I look at some of their picks, and I think they have done pretty well here recently. Now, that may be because Snyder is backing off of things. I don't know, but that's most of the people I know who are Redskins fans, with the exception of one or two, who still actually go to games, they are, I think they've just about reached their threshold with the team, and it's a shame because now all you have are the really diehard meatheads. Before we get into our next, a couple of notes around the ACC. The ACC will have 8 teams in the top 30 of the Learfield Cup standings, and that's a reflection of the success of athletic programs. That's pretty significant. ACC women's golf gets 10 team and 1 individual bid to the NCAA regionals. That's coming up. Louisville leads ACC baseball. They sit atop the top 10 in national polls. Some good news out of the conference. On other sports, let's get back into the NFL draft with the guys. Clemson's Christian Wilkins, a surprise that some people thought maybe he was going to be going first instead of Farrell, but he is heading to the Dolphins as the 13th pick, and that's not too shabby for a round one pick. Let's go with Will.
Yeah, when they made this pick, I figured they were pretty much waiting to tank for Tua for this season, but then they went out and traded for Josh Rosen, so they are actually going to try this year. But great pick. I thought Christian Wilkins was the best player on that defensive line, and he's getting go in a perfect situation where he's going to be able to play right away. Miami's run D was really bad, and you know they weren't much better against the pass. So he's going to basically go in and play day one and be a threat.
This is what the Giants could essentially take a page out of Miami's playbook and look at getting a player that you can actually put in day one and contribute to the team. Just like what Will said, he's absolutely going to contribute and fill an absolute need and stop in that run. And we might come back and look at this pick in a couple of years as one of those, how did he fall so low? Because the boy can ball. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does in Miami.
Yeah. Wouldn't it have been really nice if the Giants could have picked up both Farrell and Wilkins on defense?
Oh, man.
Wow, what a game changer that would have been in that side of the NFC. Wow. Let's explore something here. I have heard and read more uninformed nonsense regarding the quality of players coming out of Boston College than I can absolutely fathom. A consistent defensive organization over the last few years, and certainly noteworthy in areas of their offense, the Meatballs. First of all, they like to diss on the ACC. Well, okay, go ahead, do that. But Boston College has been delivering players to the NFL consistently over the years, and no different in this particular draft. Boston College's Chris Lindstrom, 14th pick. Xavion, man's going to the Falcons. I think he's going to make a difference for them.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to do everything to help keep Matt Ryan upright and able to deliver to all the weapons he has, the plethora of weapons that Matt Ryan has. And this is a great value pick. I think the thing with Boston College is because they don't see any on-field success or to the level or the consistency that people want. They can easily get, under the radar and get ignored. But they deliver year in and year out at least one quality NFL player every year.
You know, one of the things that I must note here is that you can't take a team's performance and just what you said, just because Boston College is not, right up there at the top of the ACC, you can't take a team's performance and judge individual players. You have to look at their individual tape and look at what they're doing. You have to go out to their games. That's what these guys are doing, man. That's why they paid the big bucks at the NFL level, to go out and look at these guys. And apparently that's what they do. They go to these games, they look, they see Lindstrom, and they look at these tape and they go, yeah, that's a good addition. That's just what we need. Will, your thoughts on Chris?
I'll get to that in a second, but you had mentioned it there, Jim, about the meatheads kind of ripping on Boston College, not knowing, you know, what they've been consistently producing in the draft. And we can look the last decade or so, you know, Matt Ryan's been one of the most consistent quarterbacks in the league. Not the best, but he's always been pretty consistent. Luke Kuechly, one of the best linebackers in the league since day one. Anthony Costanzo, a solid tackle who's been playing for coming up on his eighth year now. We look at, you know, this pick right here. You know, he's big fan of Lindstrom. I was hoping he would drop a few spots to Minnesota, but he's going to be in a position, you know, where he's going to play right away. On a okay offensive line, he's going to start day one most likely. And to add to that, you know, to the meatheads thinking about, you know, Boston College doesn't produce, hey, they're going to go into the 2019 season with one of the best running backs in college football. So,
any thoughts on Lindstrom in particular?
Good player. He was one of the big reasons, you know, A.J. Dillon was able to run so freely. Can be so consistent as a running back. He had a good offensive line in front of him, and Lindstrom was one of the better guards out there. And obviously Atlanta saw that and drafted him in the middle of the first round.
There you go. That kind of says everything right there. You know, it's is your back, you know, is he producing? Well, you have to look at the guys in the trenches. And that's what you just pointed out. And obviously Lindstrom was the guy that did that. Let's stick with you, Will, and talk about Florida State's Brian Burns. He is headed to the Carolina Panthers. I'm sure fans down there are glad to hear that. He is a heck of a player. He was projected in a few mock drafts, as a matter of fact, as being the top pick out of the conference. Didn't pan out that way, but being number 16 in round one is not a bad place to be.
Yeah, and he's going to a team that, he's probably going to see a lot of playing time right away. You know, he was one of their better defensive players last year. He was consistently, all around the football, and he's gonna, they needed some help on defense. You know, Julius Peppers finally decided to retire last season. They don't have a whole lot of linebacker depth outside of Kuechly, so he's gonna be a plug and play from day one type of guy.
Yeah, he's a guy that's gonna set the edge and put constant pressure on quarterbacks, and especially in that division, you're gonna need it with Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and whoever they decide to throw out there for Tampa Bay. So, yeah, I think it was a great value pick in terms of getting a specific need and just to help you contend with the conference, because that conference is getting tougher and stronger as the years go on. So, excellent pick by the Carolina Panthers.
Got another Clemson player coming up here in just a second, but first some other notes from around the conference. On the softball front, Florida State is ranked number 6 and leads the conference. The Cavaliers rowing team tops the conference and holds a top 10 spot in the rankings. In outdoor track and field, Virginia men are ranked 23rd, Florida State women at number 6, and the Seminoles wrapped up their 4th CCSA beach volleyball title. They are ranked number 3 in the nation. They're headed to the NCAA tournament May 3rd through the 5th. More championship action is close at hand. We'll have results at accnation.net. Let's continue with the NFL draft here. Another defensive gem from Clemson gets scooped up by the Giants. Dexter Lawrence, number 17. Xavion?
I'm iffy on this pick. I do like it because it's an actual good value pick after the conundrum and stupidity that happened at 6. And like Will said earlier, you got one of the 3 guys on one of the best defensive lines in all of college football last year. So you can't be too upset, and you're not breaking the bank. You didn't reach for him or anything like that. So I think it is a great, great value pick by the Giants to actually help bolster that defensive line.
Hey, they actually made a good pick for once. Lawrence, he's going to fit in perfectly right in the middle of that defensive line. And they made a trade. They traded last year for their best defensive lineman, I believe it was Harrison, to Detroit. And They didn't have a whole lot behind him, and it showed. And, you know, they just drafted a guy who's going to fill in that spot and be an excellent run stopper for him.
You know, Xavion, I think Will just dissed on you guys. So I'm just saying.
It's well deserved.
I mean, he'd probably agree with me, though.
I had to.
Unequivocally.
I almost had to hit
the. We're the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions of the NFL now.
Ooh! Wow. That boy. That's that. I almost bled a little bit on that. let's go. Golly, man. Let's go with Will here and talk about the Minnesota Vikings. We got a fan's perspective here. They get some depth, and it's much needed on their offensive line. NC State's Garrett Bradbury at number 18. I think this is a good ad for you guys.
Between attrition and just mediocrity, the Vikings offensive line was, well, offensive last year. Getting Bradbury at 18 is a great pick. He's going to, like I said, he's got another person that's going to play day one. I don't know if he's going to play at center. He's also played some guard in his career, so he could play both. He might, you know, I think they're going to sort that out once training camp gets here, but I definitely foresee him playing a lot in year one.
Again, it's a great pick because whenever you can fill a team need, especially on the offensive line, seeing that's kind of the strength of most NFL teams right now that we're seeing is the offensive defensive lines are getting built up, and real depth is being added to these teams that are going deep into the playoffs and stuff like that. So when you can do that as an organization, it's a great thing, and especially if you just paid all that money to a quarterback. You have to do everything in your power to keep that quarterback upright at all times. And the Minnesota Vikings did just that.
Well, let me ask you, since you brought up the quarterback situation, and I'm going to go back to Will here just for a second, and then I'll come back to you, Xavion. Did you overpay for that quarterback?
I just think it's still up in the air. I feel like he's better than last year, but their offensive line was so bad that it felt like he didn't have a whole lot of time. And with a little more, a pick like Bradbury and hopefully some of the linemen getting healthy and just all around better play, that you could argue they have the best wide receiver tandem in the league in Thielen and Diggs. And more time to get those two open, and he could be a very dangerous quarterback.
Well, Xavion, since he came out of basically your backyard, did the Vikings overpay for him?
I mean, after last year's performance, you could actually say that, yes, but like Will said, it's still too early. Do you have to have, you have to have an offensive line in front of somebody that keeps them upright and keeps them from constantly getting smacked in the mouth every time they hike the ball. You throw in the receiving corps that he has, and like Will said, one of the arguably the best in the league. They have to also develop a nice chemistry and whatnot. Or after only a short off season, I really want if we see the same stuff we saw last year with them with Kirk Cousins, then yeah, they overpaid. But I feel they're gonna have a legitimate success this year because he's had a year with everybody around them. They're adding depth and quality players to the offensive line. I think we're going to see. I think we're finally going to see the Kirk Cousins that I think we've always assumed him to be, rather than what we've kind of ended up getting and seeing.
Okay, so in other words, let's not go on a lot of incomplete stats here. So we'll see what happens this year. That's for sure. The SEC led conferences with 64 picks overall in the NFL draft. The ACC fourth overall. 28 did well in the first round, but after that it was like we were nowhere in the second, and then hit or miss when it came to the rest of that. A lot of UDFA action going on there, picking up some people, so that's always encouraging. There are some players that probably deserve a shot. Teams and the number of picks. Of course, we also include Notre Dame because we cover, it's like somebody asked me the other day about, why do you guys cover Notre Dame in football when they're not part of the ACC? Well, let's look at it this way. This is my perspective. Notre Dame plays in every sport. And that includes ACC football because they're contractually obligated to at least five games every year. So, you know, 5 out of what, 12 games? That's a significant chunk of your schedule. So that's why we include them. And good team and a lot of athletic programs that deserve to be covered. That's why we cover them at ACC Nation. Now, so having said that, and nobody really cared, Clemson, 6 picks. Notre Dame, 6. Miami, 5. Boston College, 4. NC State, 4. Florida State, 2. Virginia, 2. Duke, 1. UNC, 1. Pitt, 1. Syracuse, 1. And Wake Forest, 1. Breaking a 25-year streak of NFL picks, Virginia Tech, 0. Joining the Hokies, Louisville, and Georgia Tech. That surprises me a bit. Xavion, is it surprising that nobody out of Virginia Tech, Louisville, and Georgia Tech made it into the NFL draft?
No, not really. After the what we've seen performance-wise the last couple of years, there's nobody that really jumped off from any of those teams. I mean, you said Louisville, but the team left last year when Lamar Jackson left. So, yeah, essentially there was...
There was
nobody left for that team to be chosen and stuff like that.
Yeah, deflated balloon, unfortunately. I think it's going to turn around this year. I'm seeing some very encouraging things. Out of those three teams, I think it's going to be an exciting year. Will, what are your thoughts on these three teams? You know, the Hokies and the Cards and the Yellow Jackets having no picks. I mean, some quality players there for sure.
Yeah, but I feel like this – you know, none of these teams really have a lot going for them right now. We saw Virginia Tech have one of the worst seasons they've had ever and needed a fumble in overtime and to reschedule a football game against Marshall to go to a bowl this year. And they had a lot of attrition, during the season. And They just weren't that good of a team, and I understand why nobody got drafted. They just didn't really have the normal NFL talent that you usually see. Louisville, yeah, like Xavion said, everything was propped up by Lamar Jackson, and we just saw how bad things were last year. Georgia Tech doesn't surprise me. I would have thought maybe they would have a shot with somebody getting drafted on either on both lines, but you know that hasn't been a team lately that has produced a lot of NFL talent, but maybe with a little more modern offense, that changes.
Well, thanks to Will Ogenen and Xavion for taking a look at the NFL draft. Thanks again also to Bill from MyBeerBuds.com for joining us. If you like craft beer, be sure to follow them. Thanks for letting us join you. We'd love to hear from you at contact@accnation.net. That's contact@accnation.net. Drop us an email. Give us a shout out on Twitter and Instagram at ACC Nation. On Facebook, it's ACC Nation Sports. Will, Xavion, and I are all on Twitter. Will is at Will's World MN. Xavion is at XAYVEON. And I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.
Cool. Giants suck.